showtime! Woo! Woo!
Ladies and gents, welcome to episode 3 of the Weekly at Wrestling Ramble, where this week, as we told you guys, we will be covering SummerSlam 95. This was requested to us to do this by one of the listeners. And just remember, guys, if you would like us to cover something, or if you'd like to kind of say anything about our shows or get involved, just make sure to go to www.jibberjabberpodcast.com and you can let us know what you think there, along with all our socials and here on the YouTube. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. As always, moving forward, I will be weekly rambling with Todd. Todd, how's it going, mate?
I'm doing well, brother. I'm doing well. Buzzing for SummerSlam 95. Yeah, this has been good fun.
Enjoyed it. Absolutely. This has been well received as well. SummerSlam 95 is a very, very pivotal piece of WWF history. So we'll get into that just in a moment because, you know, the show is called Weekly Wrestling Ramble. So we kind of ramble a bit about what's happened this week in wrestling. So we're just going to kind of give you the highlights because there's a lot to get through the day. So we're just going to kind of go through the highlights of what's happened this week in wrestling. It's been one of those weeks where a few things have happened, but there's not like we have to dedicate a full episode to that.
Not much. Let's be honest. It's been a low-key week, Kevin. It's been a low-key week, but we'll talk about it briefly.
Absolutely. So, yeah, so I'll kind of kick off what happened this week. We'll start with Monday Night Raw. I mean, there's really only one thing we can talk. I mean, it was Legends Night, where they brought back all the legends like...
from Carlito.
Fox. Yeah. Do you know what happened there with Carlito?
No, not quite.
So he was booked to come on, but then when he was told what he was going to do, which was one of the, you know, Randy Orton was going out and round assaulting all these legends.
Aye, that was his trip that night.
He was like, yeah, I'm not traveling from one end of the country to another to be insulted by Randy Orton. You know where I am. He said, you know where I am if you want me to come back and wrestle.
You just hear JR going, oh, because it's... Because he's not getting a spot. He's not getting his push.
You know, if he was to, you know, show up and take part, but that's his problem. You know, I was just listening to him ramble on a little bit about Carlito. I think it was the latest episode of Girl and JR. So that's why we didn't see Carlito.
Oh, right. Did not know that. There you go. Thank you. This is what it's about.
As a Scottish wrestling fan, I really enjoyed the Hulk Hogan, Drew McIntyre. I thought, do you know what? Everyone around the world right now is cringing, going, oh, no, Drew. But see, for me, I was like, I'm living through Drew right there. I'm like, that would be me if I was in Drew's position. Yeah. I'd be doing the exact same thing.
You could tell, especially that segment, that he was just like total pinch me moment. Because I thought to myself, that's a wee guy who came, not wee guy, that's a guy who's like came from a place like we did. And who'd have thought that, you know, 20 years down the line, he'd be getting told by Hulk Hogan, you remind me of me, brother, me and fucking Jimmy Hart. And then he's getting to Hulk up and he's living this dream, man. That's awesome. It's great.
Yeah, the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart right there. And Sheamus is getting it all. You know what, fella? Do you know what? Is Sheamus not going for the old Irish fucking, the old Irish guy with the hat? And it reminds me of Rocky Balboa and Rocky One.
It's still not my favourite Sheamus gimmick. My favourite Sheamus gimmick is the one that we used to take the utter piss out of, 1-800-FELLA. Remember?
Just his own me.
What was that? It's like you'd have phoned him and he would do a punt or something. 1-800-FELLA. I don't think people remember that, but that was class.
It was actually. It's gone back a bit in the archives of WWE there.
Yeah, we're getting a bit off track. I was worried about getting off track. Don't want to go into too much of Raw, but for me, the summary for Raw is you'd watched it before me. I think you watched it live. And you text me, and it was along the lines of, oh, no.
No.
And I went, oh, I had an idea. In my head, I was like, it's two people. It's either Lesnar or who it actually was. It's Goldberg, and they're coming back to kill Drew. It's going to happen. If it wasn't going to happen, it wouldn't happen. You know, Goldberg's going to go over at the Rumble.
Why? Why do we need this?
Because Vince sees goal. To be fair, it's sad. It totally is. Vince looks at Goldberg, and I think he still sees a guy. To be fair to Goldberg, guy is still in killer shape, still looks the part. He never could really properly go in the ring, but he just goes in, 5-minute squash matches. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's probably going to happen to Drew. He'll probably put up a little bit of offense, go down heroically, but he's going down. For the big rematch, we're going to have to take it in the chin, but at the end of the day...
Just like Drew.
At the end of the day, this is all a setup so that Drew can become a free-time champion.
Well, here's the thing.
Let's be honest.
Like, there's definitely a place for Goldberg in 2021 on the roster. Yeah. There definitely is. He's an attraction, but does he have to always take the... You know, look at The Fiend, right? We loved having The Fiend as a champ. Yeah. We had Kevin Owens as a champ. Does he need to come in and just squash? And here's the thing. They didn't even set it up. You know, you've been disrespecting everyone. You've just seen what Randy's done all night, and you're coming here
to
give shit to the guy that's basically always been respectful towards the business,
the legends.
Right? You couldn't pick a guy that has been more respectful, and he comes out and he's like, "You're disrespecting." If anything, that makes Goldberg look like a chump, right? It's not done him any favors, and I guarantee if there was an audience in that crowd. Like, if there was an audience in that arena, Goldberg would have been booed. It would have been complete, nah, fuck this, we know what's coming.
Yeah, see, when he came back the first time round and he beat Lesnar in like 3 minutes, that worked because nobody expected that. And the first time it did, it was like magic and light in the bottle. I went back and watched that the other night because it only took 5 minutes of my time. It was good. The crowd were genuinely surprised. It was a good surprise. But they've tried it a couple of times since. It's not going to work. I wouldn't actually mind if he came back and, you know, if Goldberg has to beat Drew, make it, you know, something of a match here. Don't just squash him. Please just give us something at least. Give us at least 10 minutes. You've got that in your Goldberg. If you can go with Undertaker and just about kill him for 15 minutes in Saudi Arabia, you can surely work with Drew and put something unpresentable.
Well, we could get to Royal Rumble and the match starts and Goldberg goes for a spear and ends up with a claymore and Drew just pins him 1, 2, 3. That'd be like, yes!
It would be great, but you know it's not happening.
It's not going to happen. It would be amazing, though. And by the way, if you watched last week's episode, I did say Boogeyman will show up because it's Legends Night, and I was right.
You were right. To touch upon it briefly, my overview of it is you told me about Teddy Long, and as soon as he came out, and you knew it was coming. I love it. It's a whole...
A match with Undertaker.
It was the New Day's reaction as well. To it, like, oh, you fucking man now.
Exactly.
And then, of course, it's the typical tag team match player. And all his 2000s kids are going.
He was basically a meme at that time. He was made a meme.
He's embracing the meme.
Exactly. And that's the best thing to do, man. That's the exact best thing to do.
It's almost his best moment for him was his Hall of Fame speech, right? He pulled it all out as well. It's playing the hits, and that was good. It's kind of felt like shit on Ric Flair night as well. Guy couldn't catch a break all night.
Yeah.
He got totally put down by Randy Orton, and then... I don't know if they're setting up with him in a feud for his Rick versus Charlotte at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I think they're trying to. I mean, it was always kind of obvious from the minute Charlotte had returned that there was that heel waiting to burst out.
Oh, she's cracking! Right. I'm a massive fan of Charlotte. I know people. I know a lot of people I work with who watch a lot, probably a lot more wrestling than I, are absolutely totally anti Charlotte. I don't know if it's a movement, but for me, she's the best. She's the best woman worker in the company.
Not only just for that, when she arrives, there's an aura.
Yeah.
She has a presence of just greatness.
She is a star. It's as simple as that. For me, she is like...
The Rock.
The good thing is, and the good thing is the company do see her that way as well. And if you don't like it, well, tough. She's the woman equivalent to Roman Reigns in this company.
Mm-hmm.
And I put her above Becky Lynch and stuff like that. It's,
I totally agree. Opinion. Sometimes you just gotta accept it for what it is, right? So to kind of wrap up Raw, it was a bit of a letdown as far as Legends Night goes.
Yeah, Legends Nights can't be done
The rating's done really well, though. The rating's done really well.
They'll probably do this again down the line, but for me, a legend show, like you speculated last week, is just not the same for a live audience, because you get pops you don't expect. Like Bruce Pritchard, when he, mm-hmm. before he returned in the official capacity, I remember one time he returned with his brother Love in the background. The pop he got that night was insane. Yeah. We all know why. But,
yes, and Eric Bischoff as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Bischoff, I was like, yes. And by the way, as far as Eric Bischoff goes, easily, hands down, between him and Stephanie McMahon, that thing he and Stephanie McMahon had back in 2004, best GM. Best GM, hands down. There's a place for Eric Bischoff. And
WWE history, yes. He's not just the WCW guy, for sure.
No, he kind of paved the way for GMs. So, yeah, so let's move over to AEW right now. And AEW, this was the week after the Brodie Lee tribute. And really, all I can kind of talk about where it comes to AEW as we're kind of doing highlights this week is the Bullet Club have reunited in AEW.
But they're not in AEW. They've got half of them in TNA, half of them in AEW. And I'm going to be the controversial guy and I say, I don't give a shit. I do not care. Bullet Club, click ripoff, it's fine. If you like Bullet Club, good for you. I'm glad you're getting
Well, I mean, these guys are obviously not the Bullet Club that we've seen in Japan.
No.
There's a lot of elements missing. Finn Balor, AJ Styles, you know, not just that, but there's been different cycles of the Bullet Club. So I think we're getting the AEW rendition. And I say AEW, I imagine the other guys will kind of show up on TNA. Impact at certain points, but it's AEW is where it's at. So I think we're just kind of look. And by the way, is this not even like? And I was going to say this right on Raw, AJ Styles got pyro, so I was like, he's not leaving.
you text me.
I was like, AJ Styles had pyro. He is not leaving. Right? But if ever the speculations were to be rife, you know, the fact that AEW. Which is more attractive of an offer for a superstar to want to go there based on the schedule, how they're treated, the creativity, all that, right? The money as well, right? But when the Bullet Club's there and the leader of the Bullet Club was AJ Styles.
Yeah.
Who's to say that they're not, like, maybe there's been conversations off the record between Alan Jones and the guys at AEW, and they're just setting this
you
up.
You called it weeks ago, and if it does happen this year, I will give you all the praise you have coming your way.
I mean, I think maybe they gave him pyro to be like, right, we see what's happening here, right? Give him pyro, give him a raise. Yeah, I mean, I don't know why they kind of put almost with him. Almost, yeah.
They've changed his name. They kind of pretend to pronounce the nation, but I like that guy. I like that big guy. If he's booked correctly, which he probably fucking won't, you could do something.
Yeah, I just think, you know, AJ Styles probably wasn't the guy to put him with. He doesn't need him. Like, AJ doesn't need almost.
No, but I think he likes the idea of having... This all originates from Shawn Michaels and Diesel. And that
exactly,
opinion,
so I was just about to
it's
say.
It's just trying to do the same thing over and over again. It works to an extent, you know.
I think, see, with the Bullet Club formation has kind of taken light off. Well, that's John Moxley back in the company after losing his title. It kind of took the spotlight off of that, which, I mean, it's not like he left, but he was kind of on a bit of a hiatus after it, which, by the way, I think is a good idea, by the way. See, if your champion's going to lose. I mean, we've seen it with Brodie Lee, obviously. Unfortunately, he didn't come back. But Cody, after a champion has lost a title in AEW, they tend to not come back right away. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I totally agree. It gives them... It just gives a bit more... what's the word? It just feels a bit more special when they do show up then.
Builds a bit of mystique as to what's going on. You know, you think about them more.
It's a bit like when you had your Undertaker part-timers and even, like, see, they become a special attraction. But I know John Moxley's not exactly at that Triple H or Undertaker stage yet, but it does help. It doesn't oversaturate you. Also, I'll give a brief mention to Cody, of course, had to have Snoop Dogg in his corner this week. Snoop Dogg didn't have a fucking clue which way what was going on. He didn't have a bloody clue what was going on, man. He was high off his nut. But Cody obviously seen him walk in the building and went, oh, Snoop, you're in my corner because everybody's in my corner because I'm Cody Rhodes and I'm center of the universe.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of Jeff Jarrett memes that Cody Rhodes is basically the Jeff Jarrett of TNA.
I think he's worse than Jeff Jarrett. At least Jeff Jarrett would put people over. That's right.
Yeah, I
The
suppose.
same. And then people go to Cody has put people. It's like not as much as he puts over himself, pal.
Aye, he has kind of.
This isn't an anti-Cody thing. The guy's a great worker. He's got a wealth of talent, but let's be honest. If you've watched AEW like we all have recently, he's not likable at all. And it's going to be very interesting what reaction him and his wife are going to get when the crowds are back in. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I know. Do you know? It's funny, right? Do you know? We always see the pop, right? When a WWE superstar comes back, right? When the glass breaks. How big's the pop going to be when the fucking audience return? By God! By God! that's the audience! The audience!
Technically, there is an audience in AEW right now, but I mean, we're talking like it's hundreds of people. When thousands are in, that's when it will really make a huge difference.
And not only that, I think the audience that are there, see the audience that are there, they're all people that know the people in AEW. They're all people that... Like Cody's coming out, guys. You need to cheer for Cody. Yeah, Cody.
Hey,
it's not the real paying customer.
Exactly. Right? When people get back into concerts. I'm not just talking about wrestling. I'm talking about sports events, concerts, and that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be so different from what it was before because people at least the first little while will be so much more appreciative of what's going on and what this mm-hmm. is. It's kind of weird seeing events where there's people there. No, it's strange.
Yeah,
but
I know it's crazy. But
anyhow,
that's pretty cool, and I can't wait for the Cody. The Cody thing. And do you know what the best thing for Cody to do is to turn around and be like this? You know what, guys? I am the fucking man because I say I'm the fucking man, okay?
We don't go, you know what I mean? Yes!
Yes!
Yes! Right? Embrace right. it. Be a heel.
Don't be a, yeah. These guys, this is what everyone wants. I just kind of walked into this. Get the fuck. He's going to be like, you know, my pyro is better than everyone's.
It was a week when he came out. I don't remember how many weeks ago this was, but it was a week when he came out with his head on. And it was up to say, I also am the Vince guy in gorilla position in AEW.
So when it comes out to it, and the way he looked at Taz like this.
As if to say, like, stop me from doing my job, mate.
We're not all just only talent. I mean, you know, some of us wear big boy pants as well, and I guarantee you, he wasn't sitting in gorilla. I bet you they handed him that to walk out. All right.
Well, make sure you put your mic on, Cody. Fucking dick.
Such a dick. Right. But he needs to turn that into gold. Turn it round and just embrace that shit.
Some of it's unintentional gold. Like the baby reveal. The baby reveal was unintentional gold because I was like, my God, this guy's drawing so much heat from me. It's unbelievable. I mean, I'm delighted for him and his wife in real life when having a baby. That's great, but... My God, with the husky, with the call. I'm not gonna bang about Cody. We could do a whole episode just burying Cody.
I think every episode of Dynamite is him kind of doing that himself in a roundabout fashion.
He's such a dick.
You know. So I think that's really all we kind of have for AEW. So we'll kind of move on to SmackDown now, where obviously for me, SmackDown is the Roman Reigns show.
Yeah,
I watch it for Roman Reigns and everything he does recently, including the recent promo. Again, intense. His promos now are just, again, and I said this previously, he brings up everybody around him. Mm-hmm. He makes them feel valuable. But his promos are great. They seem legit. Doesn't feel like he's reading them off a paper, even if he is, right? But here we go. Roman Reigns versus Adam Pearce, Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
I know you're thinking, right? Now, here's the thing. I wonder how they're going to present Adam Pearce. Are they going to present him as the guy that doesn't know how to wrestle? Or the guy that actually can fucking wrestle?
I think, I'll be honest, I didn't watch SmackDown this week. I just did what I usually did and kind of caught up with it. And I've seen this, and Adam Pearce was a guy who's kind of been shown up everywhere. He was a guy who gave back Miz's Money in the Bank. Is that the same guy? Is he the guy that did that?
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah, so he's kind of like an authority figure at the minute, isn't he? He's kind of...
Yeah, I mean, they do that sometimes for some reason.
I looked him up because I'll be honest, I don't have a lot. I've looked him up. He's a professional wrestler. He has, of course, got quite a strong background from what I've read. I don't know how good he is, but I think we should go. He's going to get beat, of course.
Yeah, of course. But how's he going to get beat? Is he going to do the whole Paul Bearer thing? I'm not a wrestler!
I hope not.
Or is he going to go in and be like, you know what? People know him from Ring of Honor. Let's just fucking have you.
If he's got the ability, I think that he's going to get beat, but I think it would be a case of, if you've not seen this guy before, oh my God, he can actually wrestle a bit. And that will obviously be as a surprise to the Roman Reigns character as well. He'll be like, oh, this guy's a bit of a threat. I better put him down or give him respect or something.
Yeah, maybe just to be like, you know, oh wow, he's actually bringing it.
Yeah, WWE, I mean, they wouldn't be putting him in a position against Roman Reigns at a big pay-per-view like the Royal Rumble, where the other match is your Royal Rumble, which is always a big draw. It's going to be a really difficult sell this year, if I'm being honest, without an audience. And Drew McIntyre versus Goldberg, you're putting, that's quite a big spot to be in for a guy who's never wrestled a match in the company, as far as I'm aware. Mm. So they're obviously putting a lot of stake in him at the minute, which is quite intriguing.
I think he's very deserving. The guy knows his stuff, and he's good on the mic, and he also has a presence. You know, who's to say that he doesn't do the whole beatdown thing to him, and then once he's done the beatdown, that's when he then joins the, you know, the Roman Reign fold. What do you think of that?
Well, we'll wait and see, I suppose. It's certainly, I must admit, I'm with you with Roman. I think he's doing the best work that he's done since he's been in the company. At the minute, he is kind of carrying SmackDown on its shoulders. But there's nothing wrong with that. That's what a champion's supposed to do. But as I say, I can't really comment too much. I've seen that there was a gauntlet match, and I thought that's quite refreshing to see there was a gauntlet match in SmackDown. But other than that, I must admit, I did not do my homework very much on that. I was very much preparing for the next part of our show, as I wanted to make sure we're doing a good job of it.
Sweet transition there, Todd. So with that being the highlights there of the week, make sure to... sorry, were you going to say something?
Yeah, well, just say, we'll promise we'll do a more in-depth analysis next week of the shows. If you've listened to the previous shows, you'll see that. But yeah, we've got to be cracking on today.
Absolutely. So next week, make sure you check us out, because we will be doing another weekly wrestling ramble, chatting about that week in wrestling. And hopefully that week is a bit more exciting than the one that we just had there. But not to worry, because today we bring you a full rundown of SummerSlam 1995. This was, for so many reasons, a very special SummerSlam 95. Maybe they wouldn't have known that at the time. They probably didn't appreciate that at the time. But it was, for several reasons. One being, in the main event, you see, obviously, Lex Luger. This was Lex Luger's last appearance in WWF. Before showing up on Nitro a week later, right?
So, in that cracking white shirt.
Right, so Lex Luger, at this point, had already been, you know, already been chatting to Eric Bischoff, already had everything in place, and he knew fine well that this would be his last time. Only he knew that, and only Eric knew that. And it was told to Luger, you know, don't tell anyone. So he showed up to interfere in the main event, and then that was the last you'd see of him. And that's because he wasn't even locked down under a contract. This was the last time that Vince would have anyone on his show that was not under contract because of this.
And you learned.
This SummerSlam was the last main last main event pay-per-view before the Monday Night Wars kicked off.
Wow. I did not know that. And I mean, watching it at the end, I was like, okay, I'll be honest, I didn't follow up where it went afterwards, so I'm really quite happy you've gave me that, because I'm like, okay, that's really strange, the fact that there was not a storyline continuity, you know, bit of continuity with Lex Luger. It's really strange, but there you go.
Lines there. SummerSlam 95 was held on the 27th of August 1995, and it was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And it had 18,062 attendants.
Awesome. Night.
So 18,000 people in a show that wasn't really selling so well. This was probably one of the worst for selling pay-per-views. Being as house shows and whatnot were all down. And this is primarily the reason you're seeing a lot of underneath guys working. Because this was an incentive to keep the guys, the morale up. Because the guys that were on the show, if you notice, the tag team champions, Owen Hart, him and, who was he tag team champions with at that time? Was it him and Davey? No, it wasn't Davey Boy. It would have been Jim Neidhart. But they actually weren't booked on the show. And the Smoking Guns were. Is with the Blue Brothers. So this kind of shows that, you know, this was Vince's way of saying, you know, guys, stick with me and I'll see you getting a payoff, because the house shows were done. The previous year, SummerSlam 94 had done 305,000 purchases on pay-per-view, and this within this year was 205,000 purchases. So it was down, you know, 1,000. So and they even the initial price for the pay-per-view was $27.50, and they lowered it to $25. I know it's not much of a jump, but
this over here would it be 1995 Sky Sports box office?
Yeah. Contact your cable provider. You know, you'd have to actually phone up and be like, "Yeah, okay, wrestling, aye, yeah, no, the wrestling." My boy watches it, the wrestling.
There you go, that's obviously like, so, Kevin came from Kevin's family came from Fife, so that's why he does those accents.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I never got the pay-per-views. Like that wasn't my mum by any stretch. I had
no, your mum's certainly not. No, your dad's got that accent.
Oh, yeah, but like with regards to that, I always got them tape trade, you know?
Yeah, you spoke about that last week.
You know, the first time I kind of got a pay-per-view was long after that, but this kind of just shows at this point, pay-per-views were not so great. This was, again, a turning point because this kicked off the Monday Night War, kind of kicked off. It was the last SummerSlam before the Monday Night Wars were kicked off. So it was kind of a turning point in WWF. This was when they were taking, this was them on their way down, you know, taking the water coolers out of tank towers. This was the start of that.
I must say, for context, for anybody listening, me and Kevin are both 30 this year. So we were 91. This is 95. So we are 4 years old at the time of this. So I can tell you for sure that I have no knowledge of wrestling. Well, I say no knowledge, I do now, but I had no interest in wrestling at the time. Wrestling was not a thing for me until the early 2000s at the very least. Kevin, I don't know. Kevin's mum was definitely watching this shit when it went down, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Kevin probably can't remember from the time it was, but Kevin, do you have any memories of this show from growing up?
Yes, I do remember watching this show because I had a lot of these on VHS.
Exactly.
An uncle of mine always had every old classic, and then we call it the classic era of WWF. Because and the tapes would be class. Like, you would always see like the match card on. I loved reading the match card on the back and going through it. And he wins. I bet you he wins and stuff. And I always remember the characters. And there was a part of this show. It was King Mabel versus Diesel. I always remembered that King Mabel was in a title. You know, the title picture.
It's a spectacle. I'll say that.
And you know, another reason I remember watching it is because when I was younger, this must have, obviously it was during the Attitude Era as it was live and kicking, and I was watching at that point. My uncle brought to me, Uncle Billy brought to me this specific VHS and said, "Watch a Bret Hart match. See that guy he's wrestling? That's Kane." I was like, "No, it's no. That's Kane." I was like, "No.
My God." See this guy, I bow down to him because you can't see to anybody who's sitting there and going, "Well, of course it was Kane. We've seen Kane." See, I need to put you back in the picture. See, in the 90s, there was internet, but really there wasn't internet. And see the legends and the stories and stuff that used to spread about Kane and what he looked like under the mask, because Kane had it fucking down. See, when he was masked, nobody knew what that bastard looked like. And see, for him to sit there and say at that time, "That guy's Kane, this guy is like a god to me," because it was such a big mystery growing up. I remember when they unmasked Kane, I was always like, "Well, it's obviously had to be somebody different who's played Kane up till now.
Can't he be the real Kane? He would never do that."
Yeah, people are sitting there going, "Oh, don't be so stupid. Of course it was always Glenn Jacobs." Right. And I'm like, but see, back then, you didn't know. And that's what, you can't replicate that nowadays. Maybe some wrestlers are maybe trying to, but for me, that's when Kane was Kane as well. So
he was the real MVP. He was the real MVP. Yeah. Like Taker, Mystique. There was just no knowledge.
There was a time when Kane had it, and as soon as he took that mask off, to be fair, it was when he did that Hulk Hogan thing that kind of...
He came back after beating down the Un-Americans and was like, "I'm going to do a Kane-a-Rooney." I was like, "Oh no!" He came back as this badass with half his mask missing, new gear, new kind of, you know, slow chemical, and then does a Kane-a-Rooney on his first night back. It's like,
Every now and then he would do shit that Kane would pull off, like he would try and rape Lita and stuff like that. Oh God, it's awful.
It's a bit tacky. By the way,
it's really bad shit.
There's some stuff in this as well that makes you feel like, whoa, that wouldn't fly today. So we'll kind of get into that a little bit.
We'll get started right now, but just before we begin, I want to thank the viewer who requested this. I don't know if you want to get his name right this week.
Simon. It was Simon, right?
My apologies, because Kevin runs the show, so I'm going to put the blame on him. But Simon, thank you very much for requesting this show, because we weren't planning on doing anything like this. And see, requesting this, I've been sitting there with the network just waiting for an excuse to watch his old shows. Mm. You gave me the excuse. I watched SummerSlam 95. I'm going to speak about it, but I want to let you know beforehand, I really enjoyed this. Some of the matches are questionable, but watching this was a massive joy.
Perfect. His name wasn't Simon. It's Nick. That's gotta be Nick.
Well, Nick, I'm sorry, you're Simon now. That's your gimmick.
Yeah, your gimmick name is Simon.
And if you don't like it, you're kissing cowboy Simon.
And we got two words for you.
And you'll be looking at the lights.
Exactly. Looking at the lights like what's his name? From the Main Street Passage, Joey Abs.
So
we're gonna kick off this SummerSlam 95.
Yes.
So SummerSlam 95, the very first match on the show is Hakushi versus 123 Kid, who Hakushi. We now know obviously as Sean Waltman, X-Pac, and if you really want to go there, Six from WCW.
For
sake. Yeah, man. So
did you know Dustin was seven?
Dustin.
Oh, yeah. Did you know that?
Uncle Fester.
Go back to last week. Yeah.
So this was a kind of just an opener match. There wasn't really much of a build. Even weeks previous to Hakushi had more going on with Skip from the Body Donnas than he did with 123 Kid. So it was just kind of something to open the show. And I think the reason they put Hakushi with 123 Kid is because 123 Kid, Sean Waltman, was the standard of wrestling.
He can work, man. He can work.
So they knew that they were going to get, you know, a barn burner for the first, you know, for the first match. What did you think of the match yourself? I know you've got a bit of a rating system going on. I want to hear your ratings.
I don't have a rating system. I'm just going to go for the traditional Dave Meltzer rating system, which of course is 5 stars is the best match you can get. Half a star is the shits and all that. I don't believe in giving 0 stars to anything because, you know, half a star is the lowest rating. But this, for me, I thought this was a really good opener. I was, I know, of course, how good 123 Kid X-Pac is because he's always been a guy who, you know, we've seen quite a lot of growing up. But I prefer when he was 123 Kid because he was almost like he was more hungry. He was trying to make an impression. It was coming up at a time where smaller guys like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were kind of setting the standard, and he was one of these guys who was, you know, grabbing onto the brass rings and trying to show what he had. Really good opener. However, as much as I was impressed by 123 Kid, I'll be honest, Hakushi was a guy who I didn't know a lot about before this. And I watched it and I was like, my God, this is Tensai. If you remember Tensai, this is like the 90s version of Tensai. But for me, he's better than Tensai. It was good work. Good, I quite like this. Really lively, got the crowd into it.
Hakushi! And,
yeah, I mean, I was like, see if his first match is, you know, a shitter that's going to really discourage me to watch this any further. At least the night I was watching it, because I watched it right after the show last week when we decided we were going to do it. But yeah, it kept me intrigued. I was like, good, okay. And Hakushi actually won with the pinfall, which I suppose at the time was the right decision because it was obviously trying to build him into, I wouldn't say a monster, but I think, you know, they were obviously trying to get him up there to challenge the top guys eventually. I don't know how that worked out. Mm. But he won, and I gave it a 3 stars out of 5.
3 stars, that's good. You know, what I really liked about the match was the fact that 123 Kid was clearly trying to beat a guy bigger than him, and he worked like he was. There was no dramatics to it. He literally looked like he was trying to beat someone that the odds are not in his favour, you know? And that's how you lose. If you're going to lose, you lose to someone that just looks like he's going to kick your ass. But at least he went down fighting. And that's
absolutely
the kind of heart that he shows in his match. So again, a lot of what's out there now would learn a lot by watching these kind of matches.
Absolutely. This was, as to spoil it a little bit, this was one of the better matches of this show, if I'm honest. When I probably look at it, it was probably the second best match of the night. Especially when it comes to my star ratings, but
which is a shame, because Hakushi was only NWE from 1994 to 1996, so a year later to this pay per view, JBL would clothesline the shit out of Hakushi, but he was called Justin Bradshaw, right?
Yeah,
and after he clotheslined the shit out of Hakushi, right, JR on the next week of Raw said, "You know, he got clotheslined so hard, he gonna left the WWF." So
that's it. He's never been back.
Never been back.
Oh, for fuck's sake! Clothesline to hell,
Justin Bradshaw.
So not clothesline to hell. Clothesline to the company.
Well, actually, it was clothesline back to fucking the Michinoku Pro Wrestling, because that's where he was until he retired in 2002. So, that's kind of a shame, because Hakushi was. The thing about Hakushi was he was kind of hard to do business with, because as Bruce Pritchard said, you know, if someone was like, you know, you're going to go out and work this guy tonight, he would go, I speak to JJ. Like, he'd be like, get the fuck. I mean, JJ Dillon was actually the one that brought in Hakushi, and JJ Dillon kind of seen something in him, and he's seen that. He obviously, Hakushi held himself in high regard as, you know, the Japanese and stuff, that kind of takes wrestling a lot more seriously.
Oh, yes.
Like it's an actual shoot. So he was that guy that was like, no. So
anytime, never going to work.
Would never have worked with Vince McMahon's kind of, this is good shit. You know?
When you really think about it, there's not been a lot of Japanese wrestlers in WWE that have been massively successful. I mean, I'm probably going to feel like an idiot. I mean, people maybe might say Nakamura. But for me, it's probably Taijiri. It's probably...
Tajiri,
he was Japanese, wasn't he? I don't want to be.
He was Japanese.
Yeah. Sounds awful, but I think, you know, if anybody can think of any others that I maybe overlooked, but I'm talking about within WWE, WWF.
Well, Taka Michinoku was the very first light heavyweight champion. He beat Brian Christopher.
But come on, look, Brian Christopher. Come on. Come on.
Wait a minute. SmackDown number one announcer still
Funaki.
With the company.
Funaki
still with the company.
Oh wow, yeah, okay.
So I don't know. Are we talking in ring career or career? Because as far as careers go, Funaki's been there since the Attitude Era. So
still wear SmackDown themed jammies to bed a bit. Funaki legend.
Yeah, exactly. So there we go. I mean, I think Funaki maybe. So match two of SummerSlam 95 was,
oh my god,
Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Spark Plug Bob Holly.
I'll be honest, right, as I say, I'm not as much of a wrestling historian as Kev is, because Kevin probably knew about this hardcore Holly.
Oh yes, man,
when I seen Spark Plug Bob Holly and his big luscious locks, I popped. I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Is that your first time seeing that?
I didn't know that he had a whole racing car driver.
Mate, have you read Hardcore Holly's book, The Hardcore Truth?
No, I've not read The Hardcore Truth.
Please read it. He shits on Shawn Michaels, HHH.
Everybody's shitting Shawn Michaels.
Right. Not only that, he talks about his actual career. Like, just a kind of a quick side note on Hardcore Sparky Plug, right?
That's awesome.
So he actually is a race car driver. He was a race car driver.
Wow, that's
right?
Cool.
And made more money in driving than in wrestling. To the point where that when he kind of first broke into the business, he was like, you know, I don't need this. So he treated it like it was a hobby until Vince took him on and wanted to pay him like extra to actually do it, yeah? So the thing is, when he first started, do you know he actually, during a race, pulled someone, because someone tried to like do something quite cheap to him in the middle of a race. He pulled the guy out of the car and kicked the shit out of him.
That doesn't surprise me.
Right? And so fast forward to that era where he's playing Sparky Plug, and this is why he got that, right? Vince is like, well, you're a driver, fine, Sparky Plug, right? And he's a mechanic, right? So he works on these cars, and that's his real hobby, his number one hobby. Well, get this. Vince actually bought him a NASCAR level, like a car that Hardcore Holly had never thought he would own, right? And Vince put in how much money to get this car so that he could represent the WWF in NASCAR. And they were going to have his guy and his gimmick actually go to NASCAR and do it. But this all came tits up when Hogan done his whole steroid stuff.
Yeah.
To the point where Vince is like, look, I've just not got the heat space to kind of do this, right? So we're going to, your gimmick, which by the way, was going to skyrocket Hardcore Holly up the ranks in WWF. When that all came to shit, Hardcore Holly's like, well, do you know what I'll do? The car that you've bought me, well, you know, I can find a good deal, get it sold and give it, you know, I'll get you your money back. Because basically Vince put the money up. I think it was like $500,000 or something for this car, right? Bob Holly was like, right, we've got this car and I don't really know what to do with it now because I'm not going into the NASCAR. We're not doing the whole WWF theme thing. I'll get you your money back. And Vince was like, do you know what? Just keep it. Thanks for at least, you know. So in Hardcore Holly's book, he kind of talks about being upset that his chance never came after Vince kept saying to him, you know, your chance is going to come. But he always says, you know, Vince is a man of integrity and, you know, he can't really say anything bad. He gave him a fucking $500,000 car after he knew it was his bad that it didn't go down that road. But if anybody's looking for a book or even go to Audible, you can get it Audible. Go and check out The Hardcore Truth. And it talks all about how he went up to, who did he walk up to? I think it was Kevin Nash backstage. And he was like, motherfucker, you do that again, I'll kick your fucking shit in right now. Right? Yeah. And Kevin Nash like backed the fuck off. Yeah, you know I mean, it's got all that backstage because this is a time where the Clique were involved, you know, and he talks a lot about Triple H being a piece of trash and how he held him back, which, by the way, this match may have fallen into that time. But he also shits a bit on Trish Stratus, saying how, you know, he never thought she was talented at all, could barely wrestle and didn't even look that great. So we know he talks a wee bit of shite in his book.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't agree with him that one.
No, exactly. But you need to check out The Hardcore Truth by Bob Holly. And that kind of made me kind of remember watching, you know, reading that book when I watched him in his match with Triple H. What did you think of the Triple H Bob Holly match?
It was a total filler match. Mm-hmm. And two guys who, you know, they're total undercard guys, but of course Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, is what the point was kind of the anointed one. I think this is before the curtain call.
Yes,
so this is kind of him on his ascent before he's going to go for his brief descent before going back to his ascent. Mm-hmm. Hunter Hearst Helmsley goes over. But the main thing I took from this match was, I can't remember ever, my experience, I've never seen a match where halfway through it, it cuts to a backstage segment during the match to show you somebody arrive. Like Vince McMahon's on commentary, and I really
that's one thing I loved about it.
Really enjoyed his. He's like, people can say what they want about him. The guy was great in commentary, man. He was really good. And often people might go JR, and you know, I get that. I get he's great and all, but it's kind of nice to have Vince on commentary. But it cuts to British Bulldog arriving at the arena mid match. And saying, oh, that's trouble for the main event for Diesel later on. Nudge, nudge, winch, wink, and I was like, that's really strange. I've never seen a pay-per-view match where it cuts to a backstage segment while the match is still ongoing.
Yeah.
So it kind of tells you everything you need to know about what they thought about this match. I gave it 1.5 stars. Hunter Hearst Helmsley went over in the end, unsurprisingly.
Yeah. I mean, see, one thing, just to kind of touch upon things that you don't see now, did you see the way that pay-per-view opened?
Yeah.
Right. Even the opening was like, this is class, and they've done that right up to like 2006 when they stopped doing that. They don't really do those, you know, well shot out. You know, I'm coming for you, Austin. They don't really do those openings anymore. Oh. And for me, it was a great treat to go and see that. And for Bob Holly, he makes me happy, man. Just seeing him coming out all happy, you know, with the big hairdo and whatnot.
That was my favorite part of the match. Just popping when I realised who that was, I went, no.
Yeah, Bob Holly, man. Awesome. This was actually Bob Holly's first SummerSlam. His first actual pay-per-view SummerSlam.
I am not surprised. He looked very young and very, he looked like he had his worst days ahead.
Well, he absolutely did. Triple H, obviously. Do you know, one thing about that match is there's a bump where Hardcore Holly does a move to Triple H and he takes some mad bump. And it made me remember, like, wow, this just shows you how old this is. Triple H is bumping. Right. So I mean, it was good. It was fun.
Oh man, Triple H gets so much shit.
Yeah.
So undeserved, by the way.
I know. I think it was. I like his old wee theme song. As you see, by the way, see when he very first started that gimmick, he was very, you know, French. He got less French and more aggressive, more angry. You start to see the game more at this period of time.
Yes.
Yeah.
If anybody's watching, there's a perfect video on YouTube called Wrestling Isn't Wrestling, and it's all about the career of Triple H, and it's like the perfect way to see his evolution and what his character's about. It's brilliant. Anyway.
No pun intended.
Yes. I like Triple H and all types of gimmicks, and I thought he's good in this match, but let's be honest, this is not who he was going to become yet. This is total mid-card fodder.
Yeah.
But two guys who can work really well in the ring, but really nothing more than a sleeper match, let's be honest.
So we move across to the Smoking Guns versus the Blues Brothers.
Absolutely. That previous match you were talking about, albeit being a sleeper, was better than this shit.
This was early on. This is Bart and Billy Gunn. You know, mullets, black
smoking guns.
Jeans. I think the theme song, the tunes do it for me, Jim Johnson shout out. And the Blue Brothers, I mean, do you remember them?
Well, that's the thing. I actually didn't know of them. This was one of these things where I was like, okay, never heard of this.
Yeah, they didn't before. Really do much. Or
I knew who the Smoking Guns was, but I didn't know who these two guys were. And no. I can understand why I didn't know who they were, because this was nothing special.
No, I think I've seen them a few times on the old tapes. But again, nothing. Like I says at the start, this was when Vince McMahon was like, right, let's give some of the under guys you would see on Heat or Velocity if they'd stayed around. These are the guys. This was their chance. You know, their chance at making some decent money.
I mean, I wasn't around in, I was around in 95, but I wasn't watching wrestling in 95. But this, I think, is like a perfect representation of where their tag team division was at the time. If this is what's on your SummerSlam card, just your tag team match.
Well, it's bizarre because they had tag team champions that weren't featured on this, on the show. Again, it was Vince's call to give the under guys a bit of spotlight, and that's
they're probably trying to make tag teams, if I'm honest. This is what this kind of reeks of. It reeks of like, here, make these guys, especially the Smoking Guns. That's what came across from this.
Yeah, I mean, Billy Gunn and Bart Gunn, you know, Bart would go on to win the Brawl for All, and Billy Gunn would go on to be fired four times from WWE, join DX. You know, Billy Gunn's had a hell of a career, and by the way, he's fucking massive, always has been, Billy Gunn.
Yeah.
Right, and again, one of those guys you don't really want to get on the bad side of.
I've just looked it up. Owen Hart was the tag team champions with Yokozuna.
Yokozuna, that's right. Yokozuna.
Just looked it up, yeah.
Yeah, big Yoko.
You know,
I forget
you
that.
You can't tell me that would have been Owen Hart and Yokozuna versus the Smoking Guns would have been a better match. Come on, that would have.
Well, Owen Hart certainly would have carried it. I know Yoko towards the end started.
Big Yoko.
Yeah, I know he started finding it hard to move as much as he did. But yeah, I mean, good for the guys. Good for the guys, the Blue Brothers and the Smoking Guns. They got a chance to get paid a pay-per-view money.
Good for them, bad for the audience, because they're boring as shit.
So we move to the next match.
Let's just pass that one. Smoking Guns won by pinfall. It was one star, totally boring. One star's being generous, to be honest. I didn't like it, sorry.
You know I love you, Bertha
Faye. This next thing was an absolute revelation.
Bertha Faye versus Alundra Blaze.
No, I've got the next match down as Barry Horowitz versus Skip.
Did that happen before or after?
I believe that happened, but definitely happened. I'm looking at the order right now. I've got it down here before the women's match.
Oh, no, do you know what? You're right, so do I. But I've just read it wrong. Well, that's funny. Yes, Barry Horowitz versus Skip with Sonny. Well, right?
This was a discovery for me as well. Holy crap.
Barry Horowitz, like the man's man. Mate, I'm just going to call it right now. See, after this match, Barry Horowitz went on to kind of receive Daniel Bryan kind of
status
from the audience. But it was quickly. But then next week on Raw, he received a pedigree for his troubles. He got pedigreed the shit out of.
See, for anybody who's maybe like I was beforehand and going, who's Barry Horowitz? I mean, I've maybe heard the name, but I didn't really know who this was. This man's gimmick in 1995 was that he is Jewish. And you're thinking, okay, that's fine. But no, the gimmick is that he's Jewish and he wrestles and he literally comes out. I don't know what the name of the song is, but it's a da 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 da.
It was class. I think, you know, for me, I'll never not see him jumping out with his wee suspenders and his blue pants whenever I hear that song now. But, you know, but I'm a Barry Horowitz guy. I'm just going to say that right now. I am a Barry Horowitz guy.
But to be fair, he put himself over for me because the promo package was brilliant because it kind of, if you're a guy like myself who didn't know anything about this rivalry who Barry Horowitz was, promo packages did their job back then. It had some, instead of having the promo packages they have now where everything's kind of taught by the narrative of what they're saying in the ring, they had a narrator going, Barry Horowitz was on the worst losing streak of all time up to this match, and he did this and did that, and it kind of gave you a background of what had happened previously before this match. So when I was watching this match, I was like, okay, I'm actually invested now. Of course, I know who Skip was, Chris Candido, and I certainly know who Sonny was. I'm sure. Like people talk about Kane being a different person, like a different actor played Kane. I'm going to put the conspiracy theory out there, a different actress played Sonny. Because you can't tell me the person who back in the 90s who played Sonny then is the same person now.
Tammy Sitch, believe it.
I know, of course, she's the same person, but my God, what a transformation.
You think she looks a lot better now?
No, I don't like degrading anybody's looks, to be honest with you, but that woman, of course, has had her problems, and yeah, but you could tell why she was so popular in the 90s, because she had it back then, and she, for me, I mean, I like Barry Horowitz, but for me, she was the one that I took the most from this match. I was like, she wasn't even in the match, she was, of course, playing the manager's role.
It was hard not to. I mean,
she was very. I'm like, I've not seen much of Sonny. Of course, I know about her, but I'd never really seen much of her work before. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I can totally get this. I can see why she was as popular and as big as she became.
You know who she was really popular with in '95?
Just about the whole roster.
Someone specific.
Oh well, you're talking about me.
Kermit the Frog, yeah.
I had my sunny days, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for this kind of match, it was the complete underdog scoring his victory, which really kind of makes sense when you look at what happened afterwards. This was kind of the downward spiral of both Barry and Skip in the WWF, because after this,
Hikushi showed up for this match. You know, Hikushi was had my match, but I'm going to show up now. And
That's because Skip and Hikushi the week previous had a bit of a thing, spat.
They were feuding, were they?
They were feuding. Okay. That's where the real feud was. Again, this is why no kind of preface was given to the 1-2-3 kid versus Hikushi. So Barry Horowitz, you would think after this, would go on to have a meteoric rise and start winning left, right and centre, but he got a pedigree 1 week and then was fed to Shawn Michaels the next week and then started a proper feud with Chris Candido where, you know, it was like, Chris Candido was like, you might have beat me once, but you'll not do it again. And he didn't do it again, interference from Sonny. And this would have actually seen... this saw Barry Horowitz leave in 96, the year later, leave the WWF. Yeah. So, I mean, Chris, just get me, see Barry Horowitz, good wrestler, very technical, and someone, he was a champion in the AWA. Like,
he was over. You see the crowd reaction when he won, where it was an excellent.
Well, put it this way, he was in a match where there was it was like an underdogs versus the champs kind of match, and it was like Diesel, Shawn Michaels and whatnot of it, and they were against Owen Hart, Barry Horowitz, and a couple of other guys. It was like a six man, And the crowd were chanting Barry even when he was on the apron.
It's a bit like when Santino was in the Elimination Chamber match and went the distance a few years, well, I say a few years ago, it's probably about 10 years ago now, but yeah, same type of idea. Like when the unexpected happens, the crowd totally buy into it.
Yeah, and I don't know why. Yeah. I mean, it's the age-old thing with WWE, with Vince McMahon. Oh, this is doing really well. This could probably make you a lot of money and create a new star. Where's Goldberg or Randy?
Aye.
You know what I mean?
Where's my go-tos?
Yeah, yeah. Let's crush this as soon as we can, which is a shame. I'm a Barry Horowitz guy, and I'm just going to say that because I think there's something lovable about Barry Horowitz.
Yeah. He won me over this match. I gave this match 2.5 stars. Don't get me wrong, I can't oversell it because it was a total mid-card match. It was a pure gimmick match, I suppose, in this way. It was cheesy. It was 90s all over. But Barry Horowitz won. Barry Horowitz won me over. Good showing for Chris Candido. I've not seen a lot of his stuff. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
By the way, did you not notice that at the end of that match where Barry Horowitz kind of rolled up Skip's hand was like right on the asshole of Barry Horowitz's arse. It was like his thumb was like on his ball sack and his finger was like at the asshole on the arse of Barry Horowitz.
Like, two questions.
This guy's with Sonny. What's his game?
Two questions, right? First of all, what makes you focus on that because... so much to the fact? And then second question, I thought about that. And I'm going to bring it up on the show.
Because I remember going, like, if anything, when you're in the ring, like, you're going to try and not touch a man in a place where you don't have to, unless it's absolutely necessary, right? Come on. I want you to go back, and even if you're listening
no.
to this, go back and look at the inside cradle and look at Skip's hand, man. It's all over his ass. It's just like, oh. It's like, what the fuck?
I don't know. I think that says more about you, man.
No,
I never noticed that at all.
You never noticed it. It's no. the shot. It's the absolute shot. It's the shot.
I'm sorry. I did not focus on that.
Well, man. You're going to have to go back and check it out. His hand
there you go.
Right there on his fucking
well, guys, couch, for those who are less fortunate than me and have to watch that with the bung piece knowledge, enjoy. Moving ahead to our next match, which was the one that Kevin fought was before this one, which was Alundra Blaze versus Bertha Faye, mm-hmm. and this was stinking. But what I will say is, see this Bertha Faye, mm-hmm. Big Bertha, as she was called, I was like, I thought I knew a lot about wrestling, at least, but I know fuck all, man, because this period is unknown to me. I didn't know who Big Bertha was.
Bertha Faye,
by the way,
you.
She wins this match, and she becomes the women's champion. And I was like, women's champion I've not even heard of before. Mm. Shame on me. Shame on me. Also, I didn't Google this afterwards. My thought was, is the reason why I've not heard of her, she probably passed away now. Is that right?
Yes.
I didn't look it up. I just kind of had, it's quite bad. That's what's bad about wrestling. Sometimes you look at it and go, well, I've not heard about them. They must be passed away or dead. And yeah. I was right here. That's a shame.
She did pass away. I think it's due to her size. She was quite a mainstay within that company. I know she got bullied quite a bit about her size and she ended up leaving.
It's but, a wrong era.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, her biggest feuds were with Alundra Blaze. I remember seeing, I think it was one previous to this, a pay-per-view previous to this where she wrestled Alundra Blaze and couldn't get the job done. Bertha Faye, she reminds me of in a way that's not supposed to be in any way an insult, but you know Majin Buu from Dragon Ball Z, just it's this big pink lovable piece of goo, right? But the thing is, though, it's kind of lovable and playful, but if you fight it, you're losing.
Yeah,
yeah.
She was a heel here, and I mean that's the whole thing. Even though she was a heel, where Harvey Whippleman was at the ring, I knew who Harvey Whippleman was,
mm-hmm.
And he did his role quite well because he just came across as a total.
Elements of Jim Cornette right there.
Yeah, yeah. But he had that whole pathetic, you know.
Don't you touch her! You can't touch her!
I just didn't like this, I'll be honest. Alundra Blaze showed to me that I was like, all right, she's trying to make the best of it here. It's
she was the Charlotte. She was like a 90s version of
this. This is before she went to WCW and chucked the title in the bin, is what I thought when I seen her. I was like, all right, okay. Is she the one that used to always basically kick about with Cyndi Lauper and all that as well? Is that the same person?
Yeah. You see, she used to be Medusa in earlier promotions and stuff.
Right, makes sense. Yeah.
She's like pedigree. She was the top of the chain. Like, she was what Charlotte is now.
Yeah, she was a champion coming to Smash. She did lose it, and I was like, all right, okay, so obviously she's going to win it back down the line. I didn't enjoy this match. I gave it 1 star. And it's not for the want of trying. Obviously, Alundra Blaze gave it her best, and I don't want to knock Bertha because I get the feeling that she did everything she could. I think she was just a limited worker. She was put in there for her size. And she seemed, even though she was a heel, she does seem to have that element that she had it shining through. She must have been a lovely woman in real life, and I'm sorry to hear that she's no longer with us, but hey, she was WWF Women's Champion, so she's
exactly at a time as well
before, more than most people did.
This was before WWE went all like we're in perfect times with
world's watching,
yes, with a woman. So this was a time where women were kind of treated as serious wrestlers. Because there was a time where women wrestling was serious in WWE, WWF, and then it got non-serious, and then it came back.
Well, of course, it was JR did actually show up. He was up the aisleway, and he actually did a post-match interview with Faye and Whippleman, as you kind of alluded to Whippleman, what he said there. So there you go, there's your Jim Ross moment in there as well.
Get your hands off her! I'm happily married!
Yeah.
Which, by the way, which if you listen to Grill and JR, JR said any opportunity that he got a chance to talk about his mum or his wife Jan at the time, he would always do it, right? And any time he said, well, I'm happily married, that was always because he knew Jan was watching, and it was his way of blowing a kiss through the screen.
Well, that's nice. I don't like when Jim talks about his wife, because it's really, really sad. It's really bad for him.
Really horrible. But I mean, but that just shows you. And JR wasn't on commentary here, but if you go back and watch certain clips, JR did do a re-recording of SummerSlam 95, so you can find his Barry Horowitz wins! Horowitz wins! Horowitz wins!
Yeah.
It wasn't actually a thing, but it became a thing.
Yes.
He done a re-recording for it when Vince wanted to get rid of all the McMahon commentary, which, by the way, I'm just saying, McMahon was class on commentary.
He was. He shouldn't knock himself so much.
No, absolutely not.
I want to move ahead because the next part was probably one of my favourite parts of the whole show. Now, this was at least in the because it really kind of Paul Bearer in the next promo mentions Coliseum videos. I was like, was this part of the broadcast, or was this actually? It's on the WWE Network. This promo, and my God, this promo was better than the next match. This promo is like vintage 90s Paul Bearer and Undertaker.
Yes.
Oh, it's so good, man. Just the atmosphere of it all. The promo by Paul Bearer and the promo by a young dashing Undertaker.
I love it is after he says something, he's like this.
That was his thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right.
So this is the dawning of the Undertaker. This is like proper old school Undertaker.
Before he
moved on to forgetting all the, because this is the cheesy version of the original Undertaker.
Yes,
he got proper serious.
The thing is, though, right? It's cheesy, but it still feels serious, man. They still build him as like, you don't fuck with this guy. I mean, he's for the guys who are listening, it's Undertaker. The next match is a casket match. It's Undertaker
versus Godfather.
Kama, as he's known. Yes. Kama! And he's got the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. He comes out to the Million Dollar Man's theme.
Yep.
And they have a casket match. And the casket match is all right. It's okay. It was quite good watching this match because, of course, I know of these two. And if you'd asked me if they'd ever wrestled before, I probably would have said no. And they did. Just watching two
even Undertaker versus Godfather. I mean, this was the time where they were traveling together as well.
Exactly.
So really good friends.
It's
at this point, it'd be like you and I wrestling in a ring at that point.
Exactly. It's good. I mean, after hearing the Broken Skull sessions of Undertaker and knowing how close he is with
Charles Wright.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Knowing how close they are together, it's quite nice watching this because you know it's just two pals working, and they're working in a casket match, and they've got their buddies out there. Maybe not Ted DiBiase, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. Let me tell you a wee story, obviously. You know, I've met Ted DiBiase, the man himself.
Yes,
right?
At Whitburn Academy, of all places.
And the one thing I said to him was like, like, wow, you've worked with Undertaker, which is such a stupid thing to say, really. You get an opportunity to speak to the Million Dollar Man and you ask him about working with Undertaker.
It was a long time ago, man. Right. You were young, forget
yeah,
yourself.
Yeah. And he goes, yeah, man, I showed him the way in. You know, and it's true. And that kind of, you're seeing that. This is after Undertaker's broken off from Ted yes. DiBiase, and now Ted DiBiase has his Million Dollar Crew and he's trying to take out the Undertaker. You remember what comes after this?
No, I'll be honest, I don't. I see this. These are
Undertaker
the years where I'm not well versed.
Undertaker has to leave because he's got an issue with his face. He gets hit in the face.
He's got the mask. Right.
And Ted DiBiase brings in fake Undertaker.
This is what happens, okay.
And then
I need to watch that stuff.
Taker comes back and it's Taker versus Faker.
You need to recommend, anybody listening to this show who wants to recommend the show, keep this stuff in mind because these are the years of wrestling that Kevin knows quite well. I need to watch a little bit more of. So these are the years I'd like to watch more.
For context, I got into wrestling when I was younger. So I did kind of start in this era, but what was live on TV for me was the Attitude Era. So during the Attitude Era, I would get tapes of this era. So I'd learn about this era as I'm watching the Attitude Era. But I'll always say WrestleMania 6, first VHS tape that I ever got. And that's maybe one we should maybe do, WrestleMania 6, right? But yeah, so do you know what? It would be really interesting for us to do more of the old school classic WWE before it, and then we'll go through to the Attitude Era. And kind of the thing I'll say about the Attitude Era is, though, WWE Network doesn't have it all. Go to YouTube. You'll see stuff on YouTube you'll never see on WWE Network.
It's censored, that's why.
Yeah, yeah. And the stuff on YouTube, though, you're going to have to really look at it because it's blurry and hazy and foggy mm-hmm. and you just kind of see it. But there's a lot that'll come to me when we cover that stuff that is never talked about until someone brings it up. Right?
These are the type of things... Like, we're not doing your segment this week where I try and catch you out. We're not doing that this week because we're... doing a show, of course, but mm-hmm. this is the reason why I love doing stuff like that, because yeah. I always learn shit that really is not let's say advertised in the history of WWE and what they like to see. Kevin's got all the shit in the dirt in them. So.
Did you research Paul Ellering?
No. Oh.
What'll happen, mate? What'll happen is we'll get told to cover a show and he'll show up. And I want that to be your moment where you pop and we talk about it. So don't research him, right?
Sure.
He will show up. He was around in the Attitude Era with those two bald guys that were on the motorbikes. And he actually wrestled. He wrestled against Golga. Right?
We spoke about Golga last week.
Yeah, mate, he was actually in the clip that was in episode 2. If you've seen that clip of Golga wrestling, Paul Ellering is in that clip, which awesome. I was like, how's that come full circle? But yeah. I digress.
Yes. to get back to the match, I'll be honest, I'm not going to speak. We've not really spoken depth about the matches. I'm not going to sit there and go, he did the chin lock.
Play-by-play stuff, man. That's
exactly.
not what we do.
If you want to watch it, it's a good match. For me, it went a bit too long. I think they were given a bit too much time. But of course, the thing that ruined this match for me was like, there's no way that Cam is beating Undertaker. Undertaker's winning this casket match. I mean, God, the casket's even got a picture of his face on it, for fuck's sake. So, yeah, Undertaker
won. Rest in peace.
Yes. I like that. As I said before, I like the promo more than the match. I gave it 2.5 stars. It's typical Undertaker fare. Undertaker's never been the greatest wrestler, but see, when it comes to like spectacle and just, you know, you just can't help but just be drawn to it. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
So 2.5 stars from the match. It wasn't fantastic. I don't know if we actually spoke about this, but throughout the night, Dean Douglas
Shane Douglas
was kind of doing his whole gimmick, his whole teacher gimmick for it, and he was kind of critiquing the matches as it went throughout the night. And of course, he's in total heel mode, and I can just imagine Vince being like, "You can tell me that you'd speak down to me and all that. I don't like getting speak down. I don't like you speaking down to me. You're not my teacher." Fucker.
Yeah, you realize though they gave that gimmick to Christopher Nowinski like 10 years later.
God, they gave it to Matt Stryker after that.
Right, so it's had three generations of that gimmick.
He's been trying to make the teacher gimmick work for a long time and it's never been successful and it probably never will.
I don't know, I really liked Christopher Nowinski. He was a good heel.
Well, I'll be honest, I don't know too much about Christopher Nowinski. I've not watched a lot of his stuff.
He works with AEW now.
Really? There you go. Mm-hmm.
He also done the he's the one that extracted Chris Benoit's brain and done research on it. So he actually took Chris Benoit, a guy he worked with, cut his head open, took the brain out, and researched it to find out that his brain was that of a brain of someone that was in their 80s. Okay. So that was actually him. So imagine that. Imagine traveling up and down the world with someone like Chris Benoit wrestling them, and then you're the one that takes the brain out of that man's head. That's fucked up.
That is pretty fucked up. But you like that type of shit. So of course you knew that.
No, I knew it because it was a thing. Christopher Nowinski, his gimmick was that he was a teacher, right? That he was intelligent, but he actually is. He left wrestling to go. He had an injury. He left wrestling and became richer because of the stuff that he does. He went to Harvard. He actually went to Harvard.
He's obviously a very clever cookie and done the right thing with his career. But there you go. Christopher Nowinski, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe we'll do more stuff on him in the future.
Yeah, well, but come on, of course.
I just wanted to touch on it because I realise we've not actually spoke about it. It's not a massive part of the show, but it's just something. It's part of SummerSlam 95. They make a deal about it. So, we'll move ahead to the next match, which is one that I was really looking forward to, because if you asked me, you said, Todd, has Bret Hart ever wrestled Kane before? I would have went, nah, wrong error. Never crossed paths, never happened. And I would be wrong, because technically they did. Going back to what you said about your uncle, Isaac Yankum is Kane, and here he is facing Bret the Hitman Hart, which I think is quite
a feat.
At this time in 1995, quite a badge of honour, because Bret Hart was really, really big at this time. What did you make of this?
Well, I mean, it's Isaac Yankum, DDS. So to kind of create a bit of background, Bret Hart had been feuding with Jerry the King Lawler at this point. This was back when Lawler was still in the ring, which, by the way, he still is, by the way. But this is back when Vince was like, you should still be in the ring. And he had a match with Bret Hart, and Bret Hart made him eat his own foot. He put his own foot in his mouth.
I've seen that.
Yeah, it was like disinfect. He had like an infection in his foot. So
Vince.
So,
ha, 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 ha. Right? I love this pun that we draw in the north.
So shit. Someone was like, well, you know, King has to go and, you know, see the dentist because of it, to check on his mouth after that. Horrible. And who should he see in the dentist? I yank him. Someone that yanks them. Mr.
He
Isaac
goes to the dentist and comes back with a wrestler. Fuck's sake.
So he goes to the dentist, right? And as he's been, and have you seen the vignettes of like guys been like, no, and Kane's like,
like conditioning for See No Evil in the right,
yeah, proper like drilling holes and drilling holes in his patients. No one wants to see Dr. Isaac Yankum, whose teeth are bogging, by the way, right? So. King Lawler goes in to see the dentist and is like, you know what? The dentist is like, I'll get Bret for you. So as a retribution, you know, Jerry the King Lawler presents Dr. Isaac Yankum DDS. And that theme song, man, it's like an undertone of nah, nah, with a fucking drill gone. Right?
I actually gave me anxiety here.
Right? So that's a heat seeker right there, man. Right, so he comes out, obviously, Isaac Yankum. This is not long after he was scouted from Smoky Mountain Wrestling. He was working for Jim Cornette at this point. But Jim was like, you got to go to Vince. Vince will make you your money. You need to go to Vince, motherfucker. So he was a big proponent of Isaac, of Glenn Jacobs heading up there. Taker saw matches and was like, bring him in. Let's put him with Bret because I need someone to work with. They had plans already at this point to match him with Taker, but they wanted to put him with some really good workers to test his pedigree. And this is why he was put with Bret.
Yes. I mean, it really speaks for Glenn Jacobs' ability where he wrestles Bret Hart, and in the match later, after the next match, he comes back out again to wrestle as Diesel. I joke. It's true. He became the fake Diesel as well, which is something we'll probably cover in the future. But
again, showing you just how pivotal this pay-per-view was.
Yeah, for me, it's quite clear that Glenn Jacobs, Kane, or Isaac Yankem in this case, he's very green, and I think that's the reason why he's been put with such a, you know, such a good worker like Bret Hart. Mm-hmm. But I think this match suffers as a result. I think that's why Lawler's involved so much, because this is purely a match to build Isaac Yankem and try and make him something here. You Bret know, Hart wins this match. Sorry, on you go.
There was another wrestler called Bret Hart who changed his name upon going to WWF initially on his first run, because when he named himself Bret Hart, Bret Hart wasn't actually a thing. Do you know who that was?
No. No chance.
Barry Horowitz was Bret Hart before Bret Hart.
Fuck's sake. Fact. Barry Horowitz for the WWE Hall of Fame, please.
Exactly.
Class of 2021.
And R-Truth comes out and goes, "Man, that's a wrong Brit." Right? There you go. I imagine sitting in a boardroom, I imagine Vince's response to that would be like, "Ha! Ha! It's good shit! I love it!"
Hey, man, I'd pop for it.
That's so weird. That'd be hilarious. Do you know what gets
that's awesome.
That? The ending to that match. I don't think you would see that in 2020, the disqualification. No. Brett obviously gets his neck. And by the way, good ring work from Brett, because you can only make something like that, you know, natural. You're tangling your neck and the ropes, the top two ropes.
Yeah.
Do that and do it all in one go without really hurting yourself. I mean,
absolutely. I've always grown up, I was always a Shawn Michaels guy. And I felt like, because I was an idiot, I felt because I was a Shawn Michaels guy, it was like my, what's the word, duty to be like, nah, Bret Hart's overrated, Bret Hart's. But as I've gotten older and as I've gotten wiser and as I've watched more stuff, I've realised Bret Hart was all that, man. Bret Hart is fantastic.
Yeah, if he could turn up the charisma.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, to be fair, he still does. For me, he still has that. He's got that it factor. And people knock his promo ability and all that, but I've always kind of enjoyed his promos because
he always kind of seemed like he was talking like this, right? And yeah, would come out and just be like,
he never seemed fake, though. No, don't get me wrong. I think he's one of these guys that in real life probably, you know, he's got a bit of a Cody to him, the fact that he really believes his own hype a bit too much. But to be fair, he really was that good. This match, I mean, he does the best he can with it. I gave this match 2 stars, which is quite strange being at a Bret Hart match. Usually he's guaranteed 4 stars a lot of the time with the people he's put in, but he did the best he could. He can only take Glenn Jacobs at its time so much. It would have been really cool to see those two maybe face a couple of years down the line when Glenn was a bit more established as Kane. That would have been a good match. But hey ho, we've got this. I never knew it happened, and it is what it is. The finish isn't ideal, like you said, but it's an interesting little thing.
I mean, it happened, right?
It happened, exactly. So if you ever wanted to see Bret Hart face Kane, it happened. Go and watch it. It's not bad. It's not brilliant. I gave it 2 stars, but yeah, we'll move ahead. And just while we're touching here, you're really like rocking the historian gimmick today. Like, you're knocking it out of the park with your, like, you're adding the stuff. I feel like I'm just like, man, I'm just listening. I'm like on the learning chair here, under the learning tree, just hearing all this history behind it and letting you talk. So I think this is working quite nicely.
Yeah, it would be quite boring if we both kind of knew the same stuff.
Yeah.
That's the reason we call it the Weekly Wrestling Ramble. It's because we ramble. We're just talking about stuff.
Yeah, we are just rambling. Let's talk about the next match because I have a lot to say. Okay, the next match is a rematch from WrestleMania 10. It is Shawn Michaels versus Razor Ramon in an Intercontinental Championship ladder match. Now, I'm a big Shawn Michaels mark. I like to think that I've seen just about every great Shawn Michaels match there is to see. I had not seen this one and I did not know of it. And just to give you a spoiler, this match is an absolute hidden gem. It is. I don't know how you feel about this, but this match was so good.
And can we take a second, actually, just to appreciate the actual caliber of the Intercontinental title picture?
Oh, man.
Right? Look at that championship and who's what kind of matches and who's in the matches and who's in the running for the Intercontinental Championship.
Yes, I mean, this is not the main event, but if we're being honest, for me, this is the main event of this show. This is, I'm just going to tell you my rating. It's 5 stars.
Which in the Tokyo Dome.
people are going to sit there and go, well, of course, you're the Shawn Michaels guy. Of course, it's 5 stars. But I'm not kidding you, it's 5 stars. I thought about giving it 4.5 because there's a part at the end where it's quite clear that Shawn Michaels is trying to get the he tried like 3 times to get the championship off the thing, but he couldn't reach it. And see, after the third attempt, he's fucking raging. He's like kicking shit out, and he's like flipping out. He gets it. He gets the belt, and then he's still fucking fuming. But yeah, I'm not going to speak too much about this match and what happened inside it because it's an absolute masterwork. It's two of the top guys from the time, Shawn Michaels, it's Shawn Michaels, and Razor Ramon, Scott Hall. Of course, a lot of pressure on that after living up to the hype after WrestleMania 10, which was a great ladder match as well. But for me, they knocked out the park. They outdid themselves. I really can't say too much more about it than that.
There are a couple things to kind of go over with this, right? So
yes, the history.
The match was initially supposed to be HBK versus Psycho Sid, but McMahon felt that based on the card being kind of under, like an undercard, they needed something to really pull it out of the bag. So they went for the whole Razor Shawn part two because that match was so revered, which you kind of really thingy that, you know. But here's the thing, if you watch this match again, you'll realize something. They were told... both of them were told not to use the ladder as a weapon, because they'd kind of Ofcom or something like that, some sort of commission had leaned heavily on this violence stuff with WWF to the point where Vince was like, right, we need to take this seriously, so don't use the ladder as a weapon. To which at this point Scott Hall and HBK were like, well, that sucks, and they had plans for a match. They had to go back to the drawing board very early, right? So together with Paul Levesque, HHH, they replanned this match with Triple H. And Triple H was the one that said, you know, you can't use the ladder as a weapon, but you can, you know, fall from it. You can kind of have it land on you, right? So if you watch the match, you'll see that they're trying not to use the ladder as a weapon. And that may have been one of the reasons that it was a gem of a match, because they had to come up with new ways to make the match,
That just goes to speak for how good these guys were. I mean, I didn't know that beforehand, but I'm glad I gave it 5 stars now, because if I gave it 4.5 after hearing that, I would have to give it 5, because they're working under restrictions and they're still bringing out the goods. I mean, when you've got, Shawn Michaels is a guy who I think is like the all-rounder. I think, in my opinion, he's the greatest of all time. And I think no matter what your views are on who the greatest of all time is, I think if you being genuinely serious, I think he's always going to be top five, whether you like him personally or not. And when you put a guy, I mean, Razor Ramon wasn't maybe the best worker, but I'm telling you, that guy had a razor sharp brain for the business, still does. So when you're putting those two guys in the ring, they're gonna come out and deliver a masterclass. I don't think they ever had a bad match, but knowing that with limitations, it just makes my mind boggle.
Well, another thing, right? Did you see the entrances? They take the place like they're stars, and they are, right? Shawn Michaels, the minute that jum 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 jum, you know, the wee beat at the start, the place goes wild for him.
I mean, this was one of those matches that was kind of like an AEW match. Who was the heel here? There was nobody, because they both get massive pops, and
at the end as well, they do the whole, you know, he comes in and he raises Shawn's arm.
Yeah, it's two buddies working together, and they're tearing the house down. And you've got to. After this, I was like, "Well, Diesel and Mabel are going to fucking stink at the building now."
Well, here's the thing. But again, this was the pivot, the beginning of the Monday Night Wars. So if you think it wasn't that much longer after this that Razor was gone,
that's true.
This kind of stuff was all kind of winding down at this point.
Yeah, and this is all building towards the curtain call, like we mentioned earlier.
And not long after that as well, Shawn Michaels would receive his injury. He'd receive his injury when he worked the match.
This is where he lost a smile.
Yes, right. And it's often been said that they reckon Shawn Michaels would have gone to WCW if not been still paid. They paid Shawn for like 6 years.
Yes, I heard about that. Right? Yeah,
and
they
I think that was so that he didn't go to WCW, I think, because he and Triple H never went there. But they say that that's why Vince kind of kept him on the payroll, and Vince had a soft spot for Shawn Michaels.
Obvious. And
I think, you know, I don't think Vince was eager to let him go. And good call by Vince, because it made, you know, made all
it's
the
not
difference.
Not just a
it?
Good call by Vince; it was a good call for Shawn. I mean, if he'd went to WCW, it just wouldn't have been the same. Let's be brutally honest. Would he have had the career that he had when he came back?
He'd have joined the NWO as Michael Shawn Hinkenbottom.
Hey, he did join the NWO. He seemed to be really on for joining the NWO. He did eventually join them, and it was crap. But
exactly.
Yeah, but not everything he's done is good, but, you know, especially storyline-wise, I mean, I look at the Credit Crunch Kid storyline with JBL, that stuff was garbage, but the in-ring work has always been sensational. Mm-hmm. I know he would have always been as good as what he was if he went to WCW, but I don't think he would have been viewed, at least by Vince, the same. And, you know, that would have hindered his career for sure.
He'd have maybe gone down the Bret Hart route.
Perhaps, but Bret Hart's one of them guys that's kind of like, well, he had a stroke, so he was never going to be same again after that, which is not his fault. It's nobody's fault. It's just a really bad, fortunate thing.
I've actually seen a fan-made, like, you know, the old VHS. You used to actually have these cameras, and you could actually put the VHS in the camera and film.
Oh, yeah.
If you go on YouTube, you can actually see, like, there's some fan, like, 30-year-old fan, and he takes his camera and he goes to the Marriott Hotel where all the stars are, and you see Sonny and that, and he basically is just walking up to people in the thingy, and they're signing for people, and you see the likes of Skip and Sonny, Chris Candido and Sonny signing, JR, Paul Bearer, but he doesn't talk like that at all, right? You're seeing all these stars, Bob Holly. Now they're proper doing the whole, yeah, cool, you know, playing the cool guy, not smiling, doing the signatures. Shawn Michaels walks past with like 40 bodyguards, just fucking dingies everyone. And they're like, Shawn! And he's just like, fuck off. And you know what else? Vince McMahon even is like this. He walks past, he's like, oh, I got no time, sorry. The guy's like, oh, but I traveled all the way from blah, blah, blah. And he's like, where? Where is he? Well, that's a long way, give me. He starts saying, and he's like, thank you.
That's you awesome.
He stops, he's with Linda, and he kind of just stops to sign a couple of things, and he's nice. He says a couple of nice things, but Sean's just like rock star mode. Fuck off.
Oh, man. Sean was a dick.
Like six bodyguards around him. Like that time we went to see Jean-Claude Van Damme. Like that. Could not get near him.
To be fair, I mean, see, yes, people will probably go, oh, you know, he wasn't. I'll admit he was an utter dick back in the day, but see, nowadays, that's almost part of the charm, man. Because I think it's because he's turned it around. People sit there and say it's a work, it's a gimmick. I'm sorry, it's not. He's not. If he was a dick, he would still be the same dick now. He's not. We all have our moments where we're going to be cocks. He's going to yell, he's going to raise his voice at people, especially when he's working with them. He's trying to get the best out of them. But yeah. He's definitely a changed man, but my God, he was a dick back in the day. And it's glorious. It translates really well to the shit house that he pulled moving was unbelievable.
Exactly.
We'll move ahead to our main event.
It is now time for the wrestling main event.
And what a main event. As Vince says, the WWF has been doing quite well on diesel power. I noticed that part and I was like, are they fuck doing
just
well
so
on
you know
power?
This. This match regarded one of the worst WWE Championship title defenses in the history. This is also during the shittest financial period of WWE. A lot of this is attributed to Diesel, Kevin Nash, but can we really say that based on, you know, where the wrestling industry is at this point? I don't know.
I was getting serious watching this. Now, don't get me wrong, he didn't get a bad reception, but he didn't get as good a reception as either Razor Ramon or Shawn Michaels did. I was getting serious Roman Reigns vibes from Diesel at this point. It seemed like it was totally like, this is your champion. Enjoy your champion. And they were like, he's all right. And to be fair, he's not all right. He's fucking shocking.
Well, he was working injured. And before the match, he did say to King Mabel.
I didn't know that, but yeah.
He said to King Mabel, he said, go easy on me out there, please. He says, I've got a sore back. Please go easy on me. And during the match, Mabel fucking splashed him right on his back. And you can even hear Kevin Nash in the ring saying, "Fucking seriously?" In the match. "What the fuck are you doing?" Right? And do you know that when they got backstage, Kevin Nash went fucking mental at Mabel, shouting and swearing at him. Then Vince plowed in and was like, "Motherfucker!" and chewed out Mabel and was like, "You're fucking gone. You're out. You're fired." And Kevin Nash was like, "Wait a minute, Vince. Right, fine." Like, Kevin Nash had kind of calmed down.
Hi.
And yeah. Like, "Look, look, it's no worth that, Vince. Denny sack him." Right? Yeah. So Kevin Nash saved Mabel's job at the end of that, but
Big Daddy V.
But both of them fucking chewed him out, and that's why Mabel quickly exited the title picture and became fucking Viscera. He was actually
wearing his gold jammies.
You know, he had a couple more matches, and then they ousted him.
But this is like, to be fair, he's not really booked in the main event scene again until he's come back as Big Daddy V, which was like ECW, which is a lot much longer. But yeah, to be fair, it's maybe not a bad thing because Mabel was absolutely booked for his look more than anything else.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, he obviously had a good run as Viscera. He had a better run as Viscera. Well, I mean, he had a longer and more memorable run as Viscera than he did as King.
Yes.
And this was pre-Big Daddy V.
He's got, I mean, I think he's one of these guys who I do remember from growing up. So, I mean, obviously that tells you everything.
Mate, did you remember this? Wee bit of trivia for you. Do you remember, everybody talks about the Mae Young giving birth to a hand. You remember why she prematurely gave birth to that hand?
No.
Right? Because Mark Henry was feuding with Viscera at the time. Mark Henry, his missus, was Mae Young. So what did Viscera do at the end of a match? Grabbed Mae Young and fucking splashed her, sending her into labour. It was Viscera that killed their baby.
Oh, it's shocking.
Well, it was Viscera was the reason she went into labour, because he splashed a pregnant Mae. He splashed a pregnant Mae Young. Right, and get this right. See if you watch No Way Out 2002. I believe it's 2002. No Way Out. Watch it, right? Because it's Sexual Chocolate versus Viscera. Because of that, they show it. Here's what happened earlier on this week, guys. And then it shows you Viscera splashing her, right? And then Big Sexual Chocolate's like, "I'm not happy with this." he's then up goes into a match with him. "I'm not happy with this. He splashed my missus, made her give birth to a hand. Nah, you're out of order, pal." That's no kill.
Let's go and set our differences in that ring.
I just love hearing that. That tune when it comes out, man.
I kind of feel like when my kids are older now, I should be like, if I'm really upset with them, I'll be like, "In the ring, come on, in the ring." That's where we settle our differences, in the ring. Because that's what they do in wrestling.
Run out of a national spot, here we go.
Yeah, I just want to kind of go back to my earlier statement about this match. See, Kevin Nash, right? I've got big respect for Kevin Nash. I mean, he's done what he's done. He's been a massive part, especially during the 90s, and business certainly got the brain for it. Not a great in-ring worker. I don't think anybody will disagree with me there. He's done well for himself, but this match, as you say, it stinks. It's one of the worst main events in WWE pay-per-view history. I gave it 1 star, and I feel that was being generous. But see, knowing, I feel if I'd known this, the backstory behind it, I might have enjoyed it a little bit more than what I did. Because you're telling me about the stuff in hindsight, I'm going, "Oh, well, that's quite interesting." But at the time, I was like, just hurry up, get this over with. I mean, this is the thing. This pay-per-view, if you look at the quality of the matches, it's an absolute stinker, really. If it's absolutely got out of jail by that Intercontinental ladder match, in my opinion. That's kind of drags us into some sort of retribution. But nevertheless, I really enjoyed watching it because there was a lot of things that I felt, you know, they don't do anymore. Like I say, the promo packages, the recap at the beginning, it really got me invested. And it was just nice to go back and watch a show that I'd never seen before and see wrestlers who I did recognise, but different guises and see matches that I never thought existed. So
yeah.
I really enjoyed the first our first review, and I've enjoyed even more hearing the stories behind it. I think you've done a grand job with that, Kevin. So thank you for doing so much research and adding so much. If I was to give this show a rating out of 10, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10. Yes, because it's just personally how much I enjoyed it. It probably would have been a 3 or a 4 if it wasn't for that. I mean, this is a show. There's not a lot of shows that that have a 5-star match for me. I mean, it might seem like I give a 5-star match to every Shawn Michaels match. I won't, but you know, as we do more reviews, you'll see I don't give as many 5-star matches. This is a big thing. This is a
You've blown your load. You've blown your load. Hey, by the way, you never commented on Razor Ramon after his match, going back to Dean Douglas and slapping the shit out of him.
No, I didn't, because Dean Douglas is another guy I need to find more about. All I know is that he's not a very well-liked wrestler, especially by the click. And I remember watching a shooting of you with Rick. This is what, whenever you say to me Shane Douglas, I picture Ric Flair sitting in an interview chair with a cup as he's spitting into it, going, Shane Douglas versus Walmart. Okay, Walmart play. Shane Douglas came over shit. Walmart. And he's like, he totally cannot stand Shane or Dean Douglas, whatever you call. And even Shawn Michaels, like, I'm going to call him the tobacco chewing shooting reviews, because they're there. There's an
interview where
and he's got a big massive, he's like, there's tobacco. And it's really off putting because he keeps going, like, it's really fucking weird. That and the other one's snus as well. You've seen people doing the snus stuff.
No.
Oh man, it's really weird. Anyway, that's enough about that. That's going to be this. We're going off to other topics.
Hey, get this. did you see as well the Pittsburgh Fire Department versus the WWF in the tug of war challenge? The losers jump in the water.
No,
mate. Did you not watch this pay per view the whole way through? Or did you skip match by match?
I skipped match by match because I was like, I watched a little bit because I was getting time was getting on. But no, I missed that.
Mate, it
sounded awesome.
It was a tug of war, and the Pittsburgh fight, it was one of those, one of those old American, yeah, America, right? So Vince was obviously partaking in America, like, because it's Thanksgiving, right? It's around about the Thanksgiving time. So like, da, 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 and WWF, blah, 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 blah. And you see them, right? Mate, they got like the strongest WWE superstars. They didn't throw in Barry Horowitz. They got like Mabel. Who else? Mabel was there. And they got like Diesel. They basically put all the...
They weren't getting beat.
And they didn't. It was the fireman that ended up in the water. Vince was like, I'm not having this, man. Send it fucking Charles Wright. Send it, Mabel. Like, they're not. Mabel just needs to sit and hold the fucking rope. He's not moving, right? You know what I mean? So the WWF superstars won the tug of war. They never got their big stars. That's how you can tell. They got what's his name, Savio Vega. They had Savio Vega there.
So it wasn't the cream of the crop. It was just the big guys.
It was the guys they knew could pull. That's how you know it.
Far into the show was it? I need to watch it back.
Oh, I think hilarious. It was like after like the third match.
It's probably not as funny as it was.
Go watch it. It's like one of those things where they kind of cut away to what they'd been doing that week. It's like, this week we ball up Pittsburgh tug of war, where the loser jumps in the water themselves and they've got their fire and everything like that. And it's like, and we sent blah blah blah. And I'm like, not all top guys. You'd want your top guys in such a promotion, but you're like, nah, we ain't losing. Yeah, I mean, we'll show those damn wrestlers. Nah. Vince was like, we're sending the strongest guys we've got, even if they're fucking jobbers.
Could you imagine what the fireman felt before? Was that just seen the other side of the rope?
Looking at Vince with his big fucking mohawk and his white eyes. Yeah, I mean, watch it, man. It's proper. It's got that whole 90s, even 80s feel of, this is America, you know.
This is why we watch wrestling, is to talk about shit like this. See people sit there and go, oh, why do you watch wrestling for? It's not because it's so much about the in-ring stuff, it's everything around it. It's
yeah.
just it's like nothing on earth. It's no other entertainment. It's not like films. It's not like other sports. It's not like other television shows. It's just its own little weird, wonderful thing.
You know, that's one of the things that J-Mac always says about wrestling. He says he finds the backstage stuff more interesting than the actual on-screen stuff. And another thing, He watched SummerSlam 95 because he was kind of toying whether or not to come on and do this with us. But he said he fell asleep watching it. But here's some of the takeaways that I got from him. And one was, oh, Sonny, right? Another was, hey, Kev, I finally now understand why when we were at Comic-Con and Todd was being chokeslammed by Taker, you went up and said, kill him, Undertaker! Yeah, so he clearly has seen the Paul Bearer interview.
Do you know if he got as far as the Intercontinental match?
Because his takeaway from that was, holy shit, man, Scott Hall wasn't half a specimen. It's a shame to see where he went, but it's good to see he got his life back on track. So, again, all kind of outer ring kind of takeaways for him, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for him, this might be wrong, but I think you would agree with me. At the Edinburgh Comic Con, I wasn't there that day, but I think it was Marty, of all people, it was Marty Jannetty who piqued Jordan's interest.
Yes.
The story, because I think it was a combination of Marty Jannetty telling his stories and your reaction, the fact that you were, we mentioned Tatanka and you were the only guy in the crowd going,
yeah, man. Oh, I can't believe you missed that. Here's the thing, man. Marty Jannetty was talking about how someone had cheated with Tatanka's wife. I think it was Shawn Michaels had started on Tatanka's wife or someone like that, right? And had banged her, right? And who was the star that I think it was who in that day was known as the hard guy? It was like, it was one of the tough guys backstage back then.
Was it like one of the Road Warriors or
something like that? Probably one of the Road Warriors. And Tatanka was sitting all sad and that, drinking his sorrows, and he's like, man, if you don't go and beat his ass, I'm going to beat your ass. So his choice was get his ass beat for not beating the ass of the guy that's just tanned his wife, or go and beat his ass. Do you know what I mean? So it was going to be a fight regardless. Marty Jannetty has some stories, by the way. There must have been like six other people and us, right, sitting there chatting away to him. And it was basically just me and him and people awesome. Were there. It was actually really class. And then you got to meet him the next again.
I met him the second day. That
a bit
was
more quiet
cool.
Then. He was a bit more reserved. But Marty Jannetty, he's a hell of a talker.
Yeah, Brutus the fucking barber beefcake was supposed to be there as well. He didn't show.
Typical Brutus, man.
Yeah, I'm glad I got meet. It was very my meeting with Mark was very fleeting. I didn't say much at all to him. I just let you do the talking because I was like, that's Mark fucking Jannetty.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've now met both Midnight Rockers.
Mad, isn't it?
I mentioned that much, but
it's class, though.
Yeah, so cool. Exactly. Badge of honor.
Mate. And you know, I think we'll meet more WWE superstars and people around the round workings of WWF and the wrestling business while we do this show.
You've already met a few. I mean, you've already mentioned you met Ted DiBiase. I've met Shawn Michaels. We've seen Undertaker as well, albeit that was different circumstances. You've met Marty. Who else have you came across?
I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I mean, there's obviously the guys that
Valkavius.
I can't think off the top of my head for now, but I'm sure there's more like.
We've wrestled on the same shows as people like Wolfgang and BT Gunn and stuff like that.
Aye, if that's cool.
That's a weird badge of honour, if you can call it a badge of honour. Maybe dishonour.
Yeah, exactly. So that kind of concludes our SummerSlam 95. It's been a class episode. It's been good for us to go back. So if anybody's watching now and would like to see us review another pay-per-view, maybe even just a feud, anything. If you watch wrestling and you think this time was class, I'd love to hear them talk about it. I'd like to maybe find out a few things I didn't know. You know, drop us an email.
What I'd also be willing to say is there's all the Monday Night Raws are up till quite recently are on WWE Network as well. Even if there's an episode of Monday Night Raw you want us to watch. I was watching the one that ends with Shawn Michaels and John Cena fighting for London for 40 minutes because Randy Orton was causing grief. It's all up there. So anything at all, if you ask us, we'll do it. You know, and
maybe we should do a Royal Rumble watch along and watch Drew get annihilated live.
I think we, well, to be fair, we were probably going to watch the Rumble anyway. We usually stay up and we usually have like a Zoom chat anyway. So I think we'll just pencil that in right now, actually. We'll just do that.
There you go, yes. Guys. So we just need to decide what platform we're going to live stream, YouTube, Facebook, or Twitch. Maybe you guys could tell us where you'd like us to do it.
Whatever. I mean, to be fair, I think, you know better, these things better than me, Kevin, but I'll have my computer set up. I'll have my Doritos Chili Heatwave. That's like a staple of our thing. Actually, it was more for you, Kevin. Kevin was more of a Doritos Chili Heatwave guy, and I've always been a jelly
babies. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I mean, we'll have like three, maybe four, depending on how long it is. We'll have so much chat to kind of get through on that day. So we'll have different topics to kind of talk about. We'll maybe even do a bit of a trivia Royal Rumble stuff while we watch the Royal Rumble.
To be fair, it'll be a reaction show as well. We'll watch and we'll shoot the shit. We probably won't do a review of the Royal Rumble because we'll probably just review it as we maybe even do a little half an hour after it when the Broken Skull session is playing.
Exactly. And you guys can always check that out on the YouTube as well, so you don't actually have to watch it live if it's too late for you.
We might even be able to get Jordan onto that as well. We can keep him up.
Yeah, well, I mean, we tried last time, he wasn't up for it, but who knows? We can maybe see if he's up for that. Royal Rumble will be quite different without an audience. It'd be quite different, but we'll kind of see how that goes. So again, if anybody would like to contact us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere. You can go to www.jibberjabberpodcast.com, and on there you'll see the Wrestling Ramble section, you'll see the flagship show, the Jibber Jabber Podcast, and just go ahead, send us a wee message, like our Facebook, follow us on Twitter, smash the subscribe button that you'll see below you, and let us know if you enjoy these episodes, and we'll kind of do our best to keep them rolling for the remainder of all life and time itself.
Yes, please let us know you're listening, because we love feedback. We will talk to you. Kevin's all over the media. He will get back to you instantly. He's always monitoring stuff. Honestly, ask us anything you want. Questions? Do you want Kevin to talk about something? Honestly, let us know. We'll cover it. We'll do it. We don't mind.
Fucking lovely. And on that note,
we don't give a shit,
bro. And on that note, next week we will be back. So you'll catch these shows every Sunday. Next week we will be back with more Wrestling Ramble, and it'll be an in-depth look at the week in wrestling, our thoughts, and just proper jibber jabber banter.
Yes. Also, we will be testing Kev again, see if he can go 2-0. So look forward to that.
Todd, you will rest in peace. See you next week.
See you next week, guys.